world famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com, the radio show that does in one show the amount of work that most do in a month.
Yeah.
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 All right, enough.
Now, we had a Wisconsin baby abducted, and the baby was found. This is a baby that was abducted from a home in Wisconsin.
What do you mean abducted?
He's talking about it was stolen, right, Phil?
Yes, the baby was kidnapped, stolen, and the baby was found. This was, I believe the baby was taken last night, if I'm not mistaken, or within a few short hours, the baby was discovered.
Now, that is not something that ordinarily happens.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, and you said a mouthful there.
What?
What?
I'm just trying to protect Ms. Gray. You said a mouthful.
Well, thank you, Robert, now that I think about it.
Oh, you people got to be kidding. What Phil said, mouthful?
What are you looking at me for?
You know I didn't mean anything by you said a mouthful. I didn't say you had a mouthful.
Daddy!
Oh, I'm going to...
Hey, watch it. Don't reach across me this early in the show.
Tell it to be quiet.
Bud, you don't have to...
Well, it's pretty funny. You got to admit... I mean, I got a right to laugh just like any other man do. I'm a man, just like any other man.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah. And if something's funny, well, by God, I'll do it.
Okay, you all done with the speech now, President Lincoln?
President Lincoln. Yeah.
Thank you. So I can move on with the show? I didn't mean anything about you said a mouthful, okay?
Well, I'm just trying to, Miss Henry, make sure everything's all up and up so Ms. Gray doesn't get pissed off.
Look, I'm not going to get pissed off if you want to use the vulgarity. I just want to make sure that I am protected vis-a-vis... Well, you know what I mean.
I think we understand, Margaret, and I think we're wasting too much time. When Phil said that you said a mouthful, only once did I think, well, isn't that funny? Phil could have said, you've got a mouthful, but I didn't articulate it out loud as Robert did.
You said I made a mistake?
Hey, wait a second. Are you guys having a conversation without me here? I'm reading a news story.
My apologies, Phil.
Thank you.
Can I ask a question, please, Phil?
What?
What do you mean only once did it cross your mind?
When Phil said you said a mouthful, I thought, boy, it's a good thing he didn't say you've got a mouthful because you looked like you were chewing on a... Well,
I had a mint in my mouth. Why?
Your cheeks were bulging out and... I apologize.
And you're telling me I'm not allowed to say nothing about it.
All right. Would you guys grow up here before we waste more time? Her cheeks were bulging out. She had a mint in her mouth. So you're thinking that I could have said you have a mouthful. And all of that comes down in Robert's mind to what?
To something absolutely filthy. And I'm glad that Robert looked out for me. Thank you, Robert.
You're welcome, Ms. Grant.
Or he could have said nothing at all. And no one could have mentioned anything. And people in the audience would have thought that I was talking about you said a mouthful, just exactly what I said, and was not thinking about...
We're not thinking about.
People, plural. Yes, we're not thinking about.
Well, Phil, don't give yourself a heart attack, for God's sake. We know what we mean.
Yeah, but the audience doesn't. They're lost. And without me, they'd be further lost. A woman has been charged with a kidnapping, so we're all done. You said a mouthful. I didn't mean you got a mouthful, even though I'm noticing that you're still chewing on the mint.
I don't mean anything by this. I'm sucking on the mint.
All right. I'm glad you said you don't mean anything by it. Phil, I'm simply not... I'm trying to do this the best way I...
Just keep it to yourself, General. That's the best thing to do. Don't make a huge statement about anything. We are well into the show. I haven't gotten into the body of this story because I've had to explain the whole purpose of the phrase, you said a mouthful instead of you got a mouthful.
You see how he's laughing, though?
Yeah, I can see that, Miss Gray.
Oh, I can see that, Miss Gray.
Wisconsin woman charged...
That's not what it says.
I'm reading it the way I want to read it.
It says this right here, Miss Henry.
Don't take it away from me. It says woman charged. I said Wisconsin woman charged.
Well, are you reading it or are you making it up?
Woman charged with kidnapping after missing Wisconsin baby found at Iowa gas station. Federal kidnapping charges have been filed against a Denver...
Oh, man. Oh, my God. Are you all right, Phil?
Phil, what's wrong?
I'm just laughing. Just laughing, man. That's all. I'm just laughing, you know.
Well, you're scaring me, Phil.
No, no, it's fine. I'm just laughing. I'm just laughing. I, if I tell you what I'm laughing at, then we'll never get through this show. We will do nothing but talk about what it is I'm laughing at.
I don't you laugh at. You laugh at the fact that Margaret bought a head of mouthful.
All right, hey, watch it.
I'm going to take a walk. I'm walking around the block. Otherwise, I'm going to kill something. It's going to save me from a homicide charge. Oh, laugh it up, Phil.
God, man.
Oh, God. Don't save me from a homicide charge.
Yes, that's right. That's what Margaret's... It's going to save her from a homicide charge.
You talking about me?
Well, what do you think, genius? Yeah. You're pissing her off, and you're pissing her off early. You're pissing her off early, man. I think that's a sure bet for an early grave, if you want my honest opinion.
Phil, those are fighting words for some men. You should be careful.
Was he going to fight me? I'm just giving him the bad news, the reality. I'm the reporter.
Well, in Greek times, they did kill the messenger. You know that?
Yeah, so I understand from that movie that the Tom Cruise did.
Which one? Oh, that was one called Baccadary, right?
Yeah.
Baccadary? You mean Valkyrie?
Who? That's the guy who's in Tombstone.
Who was?
Valkyrie was in Tombstone, I believe.
Val Kilmer.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow. Valkyrie was the code name for the operation in Germany that was attempting to assassinate Adolf Hitler, that was run by Count, the great German hero, Count Stauffenberg. And it was a bust. They didn't get the Hitler, and they didn't kill him, and they wound up executing all the plotters, but they were brave men, and that's the end of that. And let's not make any more jokes. Otherwise, someone's going to have to save me from a homicide charge. You understand?
Yeah.
Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
Federal kidnapping charges have been filed against a Denver woman in the case of a missing six days old this kid was, who disappeared in the middle of the night from his Wisconsin home. The woman, Kristen Smith, could face life in prison if convicted of snatching her half-sister's newborn baby, Caden Powell. U.S. Attorney John Vanderul filed a charge against Smith on Friday afternoon, hours after the child was found alive. Get a load of this, near an Iowa gas station a half a mile from where Smith was arrested. Now, the story of this is quite interesting. The baby was allegedly, according to the timeline of how this Smith, who is the half-sister, a member of the family, was in the house along with the mother of the child and the father of the child, and I believe an uncle was there. So there was a group of people in the house. The baby's taken around 1:30 because that's when Smith left the house, and she left the house to head on back to Colorado all of a sudden in the middle of the night. Now, the police are contacted by the mother at around 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. She can't find her baby. She had awakened. Can you imagine if she hadn't awakened until, later on in the morning? It would have been several hours would have elapsed. The child might have been further into the interior of the United States, maybe into Colorado, wherever this woman was heading, and perhaps, deep into the underworld and underbelly of the Denver criminal scene. What am I talking about, anyway?
Yeah, the Denver criminal... What about a criminal underworld?
Right, not the Denver criminal underworld.
Yes, the Denver criminal underworld.
Well, what is the Denver criminal... Good God Almighty.
You know, every city's got its criminal underworld. Any big city. Denver probably has its criminal underworld.
Probably a bunch of meth cooker-uppers and stuff.
Now, what do you mean, meth cooker-uppers?
Why, that sounds like some balled-up, jacked-up... I don't even think that's a term, is it?
Meth cooker-uppers.
I'm back, by the way, so watch it.
Yeah, Margaret, we're fine. You know, I mean,
I just don't like all of the shots taken at me.
Right, but what I don't like is your problems becoming the focus of the show early on. I want to get to the radio show.
Well, then ask him, Phil.
No, I don't have to ask him anything. I'm going to ask you, as I've asked you every day since the beginning, to grow up. And, if the kid says something that bums you out or pisses you off, whatever, okay? Just blow it off.
Blow it off, huh? Blow off the fact that the kid's looking at me, sucking on a mint. Yes, I said sucking. And he looks at you and he goes, hoo, 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 hoo. She has a mouthful. I'm supposed to blow that off.
He didn't say that. He said that after we began the discussion. So just... Now, as far as the Denver criminal underworld, well, we have to now take a break. Steve, thanks a lot.
Don't get pissed.
Yeah, just... We're going to be right back here with more on the world-famous Phil Henry Show as we discuss this baby that was taken, and we're going to get to it, and we're going to finish talking about it. I don't care if someone has to die. I don't care if someone can't save me from a homicide charge. We are going to finish the story. World-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com, and tune in.
My daddy was a...
Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. All this half of the month, the Phil Henry Show website has a special Valentine's Day treat for you. As you listen to the romantic strains of Devil Duber.
What's the name of this group, Phil?
Devil Diver. And you make romantic love to, you know, whatever, your pillow, your girlfriend, your stuffed toy. Remember that we have for you a special Valentine's Day giveaway. If you buy a year subscription to our website, you get a year free. If you buy a year subscription to our website, you get 1 year gift subscription free. This is a fantastic thing for Valentine's Day, the Backstage Pass.
Hey.
All right.
Don't. You know, that's very crude.
I'll take it easy. All right. So the Backstage Pass can be found at philhenryshow.com. Our special gift subscription for Valentine's Day is there, and we certainly do suggest that you take advantage of it, take full advantage of it, climb all over it, throw one leg over it.
And hump it home.
Yes, hump it home.
You see, I don't like the crudity. I'm sorry.
You said crudity after telling me.
Oh, would you shut up, bud?
All right. Margaret, you're going to have to live with it because it's a man's world in this here radio studio.
Yes, I understand, which means juvenile, vile, and vulgar.
No, it means juvenile, but not necessarily vile and vulgar. Okay, we do have Don Mixa with us, who is a security consultant, professor of engineering, an all-around great guy from Seattle, Washington. It's the University of Wisconsin there in Seattle, and not that he's employed there, but you do an awful lot of meeting and consulting and generally, I was going to say hanging around the campus. Is that an accurate description, Don?
I would rather not use that description, Phil. I don't think being told that I hang around the campus...
Well, you said that you use some of the facilities there, the lecture halls.
Yeah, I teach a couple of classes there, and it's not quite the situation that I think people would imagine when you see them hanging around the campus.
All right, I'm sorry, I misspoke. I shouldn't say that you were hanging around the campus, but you do use the facilities there, true?
Well, when you say that I use the facilities there, it sounds as if I'm there to use the bathroom. I'm there to teach.
Don, I think we understand.
We do, Don. I'm just trying to place you there at the University of Washington. But you also are a security consultant, and you have done some bodyguard work. What about this abduction in Wisconsin? What about the abduction of this baby, the suspect that is under arrest, a half-sister, having abducted this child in the middle of the night? Is there anything about this scenario that the parents could have foreseen?
Well, it's a very good question, Phil. I think when you're talking about a family member, you don't anticipate that a family member is going to obviously be involved in a kind of an assault like this. This is an assault on the very family, and it's an assault on the family from within the family. I don't think anybody should reasonably be afraid of family members. I don't think anyone should reasonably be afraid that a family member is going to do harm to other members of the family, but that is exactly the scenario that we have here. I would say to this young couple, you know, you have to view anybody that comes into your home. And understand that I have worked in security for quite some time. I was a police officer in Seattle for a number of years. And I think you have to look at anyone that comes into your home that is not an integral member of that family unit, and that is someone that lives in that house. I think you have to look at them as a potential threat. And I've seen more of these punks, if you would forgive the use of the term, but that's exactly how I view them. I've seen these punks coming in and out of homes that are members of the family. I saw a mother kill a domestic servant in a home here in suburban Washington, suburban Seattle. She had killed a woman that was brought in to clean the house. And in that scenario, the woman is nothing more than a dirty, greasy punk that has inflicted her savagery on this hired woman.
Well, you're calling the woman who is the owner of the home?
Yes, she was the wife of the husband. The two people who owned the house were the husband and wife. The wife killed a woman who had been working there as a domestic servant. In that scenario, when I use my charts in analyzing motivation and crime, in that scenario, the mother, or the wife, I should say, is the dirty, filthy punk that has inflicted her violence on a peace-loving cleaning woman.
Okay, so what does that do for you? I mean, what, not for you.
Well, it doesn't do anything for you, does it, Don? It does something to help you along, correct?
It's not therapeutic for me, Phil.
No, I know that. What does it do to enable you in the solving of a crime?
Well, the first thing it does is it puts the blame squarely where it belongs. Whoever the perpetrator is of any crime is a dirty, lousy, crawling punk. Now, I'm using that term.
Yeah, I want to know why the necessity of that kind of language. Not that I disagree with you.
Yeah, I agree that anybody be a punk.
That's exactly right. But I don't use the term to be vituperative. I'm not trying to insult. I'm not trying to carry the insult into the inner workings of the solving of a crime. I'm trying to just categorize, and it helps focus it. If I know who the dirty, filthy punk is, and again, that is not just an insult. That is a description that helps focus the crime.
So if you come into this Wisconsin home, and the baby is still missing, and again, folks, this baby that we're talking about, little Caden Powell, has been recovered, is back with his family, and is safe and sound. He was gone several hours. It was a nerve-wracking, horrifying several hours for the family, but the baby is back. But if before this child was recovered, you come into the home, what therefore is the process?
The process for me then is I'm interviewing the father, I'm interviewing the mother, I'm interviewing everyone that's there, and I'm trying to determine who the lousy, stinking punk is. Who's the punk? You know.
Well, if I may, it seems like you're spending an awful lot of time.
If I could just finish, General, I appreciate that. But let me just finish.
All right.
I want to determine who the dirty, filthy punk is, and then I'm able to put the DFP, and I call him the dirty, crawling punk or the greasy, stinking punk, whichever. And once I'm able to determine who that filthy, crawling scum is, then I know what to do. But I've got to be motivated.
So the verbiage helps motivate you?
Yes, it helps. I'm motivated. You don't have to get me motivated. I am. I wake up ready. You know, I was born ready. Okay? I was born ready. But when I know who the dirty, stinking punk is, like, if I went into this home, the baby's gone. Who do you think it is? Well, who's missing? Where's the child? And the child's gone. When was the child last seen? 1:30. Who was also last seen at 1:30? Kristen Smith. Okay, that's the lousy, foul, rotten, crawling punk. Now I'm focused, and that's who I'm looking for.
Now, what difference does it make whether you call her the lousy, crawling, rotten punk or just my suspect, Kristen Smith?
Well, I wouldn't know who you were talking about. It's not going to motivate me. My suspect, Kristen Smith, if my sergeant came to me or one of my men, oh, your suspect is Kristen, I'd say, okay, so why should I care? Well, she's the one that took the baby.
Yes, she's the one that has the child.
I understand that. Why do I care? I don't care. I couldn't care less. I need to have something.
Wait. You're saying that you need the actual description of a suspect as a dirty, crawling punk in order to motivate yourself to go out and solve a crime. Meanwhile, there's a child that could be at risk.
Before we start giving speeches about how there's a child at risk and we're losing time and it's all of a sudden an episode of 24, let me just tell you this, Phil.
An episode of 24. I like that one.
Yeah, let me just tell you this. No cop can solve a crime if he doesn't think the criminal did anything wrong. If the criminal did something wrong, he's going to go find the criminal. But if he thinks that the guy who actually committed the crime didn't, you know...
Well, all right, so what's the difference between saying the suspect...
Whoa, hold on. Your suspect, Kristen Smith, abducted a child. Well, maybe that's what you say. All right, the dirty, filthy, crawling scum, Kristen Smith. Aha. She abducted a child? Yes.
Well, I'm having a hard time understanding this.
All right, let me put it another way.
All right, we have to take a break, though. So hold on. Don Mixa, security consultant and professor of engineering from
Seattle, Washington.
I don't understand why. Why can't he just go get the suspect?
Well, he said he needs to. Is it a crawling, slimy punk? Or what is it?
It's a crawling, slimy punk, but who cares whether it's a crawling, slimy punk? It's somebody that committed a crime, and they got to go find the person that... we'll be back with Don Mixa and more on the story of the abducted child from Wisconsin. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. How much time we got here? 10 seconds? Okay. So I can also tell you that we're at TuneIn. TuneIn, T-U-N-E-I-N. Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com and tune in, and let's see what else. Oh, yeah, if you go to our website, if you're not even a subscriber to our website, you'll find a Listen Live button. You can go and listen to the show live for free every night. You can listen. If you want the video cast, you have to be a subscriber to philhendryshow.com. You can also use TuneIn if you'd like. It is an app that you can get for your mobile phone. You can also get it for your iPad, I believe, your tablet, and others. And if you have the technology that does not necessarily support all of the above, TuneIn is your game, man. But we do have, as I mentioned, a Listen Live opportunity. Don Mixa on the line with us from University of Washington this evening, where Don is a professor of engineering as well as, or has been a professor of engineering at odd times, and he uses the facilities, but he wants me to tell you that he doesn't mean the bathroom, which I think everybody understands, Don. I got a couple of phone calls we want to get to here. Charlie, who's also up in Seattle this evening. Charlie, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hi.
Charlie, how you doing?
Oh, I'm good. I want to ask Don. I was listening and might have misunderstood when he said that he's calling the perpetrator a dirty, crawling punk. My question, Don, is I have a son who is difficult to motivate from time to time, just doing household chores. I might refer to him as a dirty, crawling punk, or something like that. So what's the difference, you know?
Well, you don't think of your son as a... You don't think of your son as a criminal, do you?
No, I don't think of my son as a criminal. Not at all.
I would not think of my own son as a criminal either, but there are times when I call my own son because I cannot motivate him. I might call him a lowlife or the scum of the earth or something like that. These are terms that we use as fathers to motivate sons. You don't use this with a daughter, but you would use it with a son.
Right, but if you're using the same term for an individual who took a baby and now on a lamb and run across God knows how many state lines, I don't understand.
I'm hoping to be clear. What am I missing here?
I think what the gentleman is asking is how do you... If you're motivating yourself by calling... See, this is a pretty bizarre conversation we're having.
I think it's very bizarre. I want to jump in and ask the question here.
Oh, Margaret, I have the floor.
Sorry.
Well, now I forgot.
Well, I haven't forgotten, Don. I think what the man is saying is, if you refer to someone that kidnapped a child as dirty, crawling scum, I understand that. But if you refer to your son as dirty, crawling scum because he won't do the dishes or mow the lawn, it seems to trivialize it. Do you understand?
Yeah, that was my question, too. Thank you, Margaret. That's what I want to say.
You're welcome.
Well, I guess I'm the only guy here that doesn't get it. I know the difference between an abductor of a child and a kid that won't get out of bed in the morning and go mow a lawn. To me, they're both scum. But the one that abducted the child is my primary concern. If my son isn't home, and he's laying around till all hours of the day eating Oreos and watching television and drinking milk and leaving crumbs like he does. These are things that my own son does. So that when I come home late in the afternoon and I find Oreo crumbs and underwear, a television is on, he's asleep, his friends are crashed, a couple guys are playing pool, I expect that, and he's a lowlife. But he's not a guy that I'm going to beat with a PR-24. The person that abducted that baby, I will take a PR-24 to them until they give it up. All right?
And what do you mean by give it up?
I mean give up the kid.
All right, so if that individual is standing there holding the child, you'd beat them with a PR-24?
I mean, if that's my choice, yeah.
All right, Don,
All right, well, that team is responsible to me, but that's my question.
Thank you very much, Charlie. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
Yeah, I was confused, I guess, by the gentleman's question, but the upshot of all of this is that I am far more concerned with the safety of the baby.
Just out of curiosity, if you got a suspect in front of you holding a baby and they will not give you the baby, and I assume you don't want them to drop the baby.
Well, you don't want them to drop the baby. Well, the thing you do is you want to get the kid away from them. You want to get that kid away from them. You want the biggest danger to that kid is the person that has abducted them. So if I have to take a PR-24 right to the head of a person that is holding a baby, I'll do it, even if they drop the baby, because at that point, the baby's going to take his chances with the pavement. I've got the suspect. I got a PR-24, and I've got it aimed right at the suspect's head. All right, so I got that under control. Now, in that instant, as a law enforcement officer, I'm putting a lot into the hands of the baby. I'm saying to the baby, all right, I'm going to give you half a chance here. How are you going to handle it?
That's asinine.
I beg your pardon?
I said that is asinine to leave up to an infant their own safety in that situation.
I just told you, Ms. Gray, the biggest danger is that abductor. I just got that abductor to drop that kid. I'm telling the kid, you are, you know, free. Go for it. Go for it. And
you just hit the abductor with a PR-24, which, by the way, folks, is a baton. It's a police baton. In the head, they drop the kid, and the kid is an infant. The kid has no ability to break its fall. The kid has no ability to do anything other than what? Than just fall to the pavement face first if he has to.
Well, let me tell you something, Phil. When I was a kid, I took a truck full on to the face. The truck wasn't moving. It was parked in my father's truck. It was in the driveway, but I was going after a baseball, and I missed it, and I dove right into the grill of my father's truck. That's what I'm asking that kid to absorb. I'm asking the kid to absorb the same thing. I know it doesn't sound reasonable, but I want the child to live.
And what's the likelihood of the kid living when the abductor drops the kid and the kid is falling to the pavement and to what could possibly be a fatal fall if his head hits the pavement before anything else?
Well, if his head hits the pavement before anything else, he gave it one holy hell of a try.
You're talking about an infant here, and the infant can't possibly make these decisions. You sound like you're half in the bag, some of the things you're saying.
Well, as a law enforcement officer, I'm used to the abuse. I've been called a pig. I've been called a bacon. Somebody walk by and say, smells like bacon. I can take any of it. But one thing I can't take is someone telling me that after I risked my life by beating someone's head in and gave that kid half a chance to fall to the pavement and roll, you can roll into the bushes. And
what kid is going to roll into the bushes, an infant, a newborn infant? What kid's going to know how to do that?
Kid is going to know how to roll out in the bushes, even if it's Albert Einstein.
Okay, now you just said the name of Bobby Einstein, right? Or
Albert Einstein. Are you thinking of the guy who was the...
I'm thinking of the genius.
Albert Einstein.
All right. How do you know Albert Einstein couldn't roll into the bushes? How do you know that?
Because no...
No. I'm asking this guy here. What's your name, Dickman?
Yeah, because a baby can't do it.
Albert Einstein. Albert Einstein. I'm not talking about just a baby. I'm talking about the most brilliant... Not just a man. The most brilliant thing... The most brilliant thing that ever came out from between a woman's thighs.
I beg your pardon?
This lady with the I beg your pardons, you know.
Well, you know something, Mr. Mixa, I'm a co-host on this program, and a lot of the things you're saying, not only do they not sound reasonable, they sound like they're the ravings of an imbecile. Do you understand what I'm saying? And I'm recusing and removing myself from this discussion.
Removing?
That's right. I'm recusing myself and removing. Yes, removing.
Oh, okay. That's glad you found the word, because it's a tough one.
Why don't you go to hell?
Ouch.
Margaret.
No, I'm...
You know, Phil, I've got to leave, too, because the stink in here has suddenly gotten so oppressive.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, go on. Okay, Mr. Mixa, so I've lost the entire... The staff of my show has walked out because they think the things you're saying are patently absurd.
Okay. Okay, well, if they think that Albert Einstein wasn't a genius...
I don't think anybody's saying that he wasn't a genius. I think that people are assuming, and rightfully so, that Albert Einstein, as brilliant as he was, when he was an infant, even as smart as he was, he wouldn't have known enough to crawl away or bounce and roll into the bushes after being dropped by an abductor while the police officer beat the abductor's head in with a PR-24. And before you say it, yes, I know there were no PR-24s back when Albert Einstein was born.
Okay, well, as long as you understand that. So the cop isn't about to beat the guy's head in with a PR-24. The cop is most likely not going to do anything or shoot the guy. And what would that do? Because the guy's going to fall. I'm trying to tell you that this is a delicate situation. And this Kristen Smith, this crawling scum, as I said, could have taken that kid into Denver. And the next thing you know, that kid has been sold into some kind of Tibetan underground, or what do they call the place that in Tibet?
You mean Thailand?
That's the place, Thailand. Why did I think of Tibet? Because of that Dalai Do, or...
The Dalai Lama?
The Dalai Lama, yeah. That guy.
What about him?
Well, the perverts, right?
The Dalai Lama is not a pervert. The Dalai Lama is the spiritual leader of tens of millions of Buddhists around the world. He is a spiritual man, or highly thought of, the spiritual leader of the people of Tibet, and has nothing whatsoever to do with child pornography. And for you to say something like that is quite ignorant.
Okay. I mean,
Thank you very much, Don.
Well, I'm not going to hang up. You're going to have to hang up.
That's what I thought. Okay, so what we have, therefore, is an example of what not to do when you're recovering a kid. Don't beat the suspect's head in with a PR-24 and hope the kid will bounce and roll into the bushes after being dropped. And don't assume that Albert Einstein was so brilliant, even as a newborn infant, that he would have instinctively have done that, even though they didn't have PR-24s back in the days that he was born. So, you're coming back in?
Yeah, well, we were listening outside.
Yes, I'm allowing myself to sit in the studio now. If you have any more guests that are that dumb, you won't have to fire me.
You'll quit?
No, I didn't say that. I said you won't have to fire me, though.
Okay, what will you do?
I'll think about quitting.
What she's trying to say it.
No, I'll say it for myself. If you have any guests that dumb ever again, hold on. I'm sorry, Phil.
Oh, God, what did you eat?
I had the chicken pizza. You want to sue me?
Oh, well, it stinks, Margaret. God.
People are going to... How dare you? People are thinking I farted.
No, they're not thinking that, Margaret. When you belch up, oh, God.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's take a break on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Why are you foaming at the mouth, Robert?
Wendy Williams, you kidding me?
Wendy Williams? Oh, yeah, Wendy Williams. That's great. We'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com with more exciting news. Some of it, the Olympic opening ceremonies. Woo! World-famous Phil Hendry Show. And welcome. You know, we had a bunch of announcements to make that I was going to make during the pre-show tonight, and it did not fall on me. I didn't have the time to make the announcements because, quite frankly, I wanted to make them to my audience, my pre-show audience, because they're my subscribers, not to the over-the-air audience, with all due respect, because you don't deserve to hear them before my subscribers do.
Well, Phil, people are going to take that the wrong way.
Well, if they're going to take it, let them take it the wrong way. What do you want from me? I mean, the people that are here on our website at philhendryshow.com, we have announcements to make concerning the future of this radio show. We have announcements to make concerning the future of our animated project. We have announcements to make concerning our podcasting. We have all kinds of things we're going to say. But I sure as hell ain't going to spill it out over all over the dock like the little Kentner boy.
Hey! That is absolutely disgusting.
Oh, you've heard us say that so many times, Margaret. I mean, you're going to get upset about it now?
I think it's very apt and fitting.
Yeah, you know about the Kentner boy, right?
What do you mean, do I know about the Kentner boy? You mean the character in Jaws?
Yes. In other words, it's not even a real kid. Okay?
Well, you should still have some respect.
For who? It's a fake kid. The fake family?
The fake? What do you mean, the fake family?
The kid don't even exist on account of it was Jaws.
See?
Well, you still need to have respect for people...
whose kids were eaten by sharks. I'm sorry, you know.
Yes, people whose children were eaten by sharks and then were spilled out all over the dock.
Like the Kintner boy.
Yes.
Oh, get lost. I was going to say get out of here, but I don't want you to.
You need me. You need me on that wall. You want me on that wall.
Thank you very much, Colonel. Now...
So I look like a Marine colonel.
You sounded like one. Now, Woody Allen lashes back, quote, "Of course I did not molest Dylan." Now, I don't want a whole bunch of tittering and guffawing over this. This is a serious story, and I only got a couple of things to say about this. You know about this story about Woody Allen, right? He has been accused in an open letter to the New York Times, I guess you could call it an open letter or an op-ed. I don't know what the hell, but the adopted daughter, Dylan Farrow, said that her father, her adoptive father, molested her. She says where, she says how, she says when, she says it then, she said it in the interim, and she said it again in the newspaper piece. She says she told her mother, she has told her brother, and she has now told the public. She was told at the time that maybe she was being coached. She's told now that maybe she was being coached. She's been told in the interim that maybe she was being coached. She was told that maybe she was making it up then. Maybe she's making it up in the interim, and maybe she's making it up now. And through it all, the young woman has said repeatedly, no, I'm not making it up, and no, I haven't been coached, and no, I haven't this, and no, I haven't that. It happened. Now, she even used the term gaslight. If you know what gaslight means, there was a movie out with Ingrid Bergman once called Gaslight. And what was it about? It was about a woman who's slowly being driven insane by her husband. Her husband's trying to drive her nuts for some ulterior motive, which I do not recall, because quite frankly, I was really bored with the movie. But, the movie was, it doesn't matter what Phil Henry thinks, the movie was significant and was groundbreaking enough that the term gaslighting somebody came into popular use. To gaslight someone is to try to make them think they're crazy. Even as they're saying things that are absolutely true, make complete sense, but you don't want anybody to know the truth, and so you gaslight them. You try to, yes, that's, isn't that nice? You know what? Maybe you're overwrought. Maybe you're just, we've seen this before. We've seen it in fiction and in real life. And Dylan Farrow, who now calls herself something else, the name Dylan was the name given to her by her parents, but I think she now calls herself Marnie or Mary or something. She used that term. She said, victims of abuse are often gaslit by the molester, by the attorneys, by the doctors, by the this, by the that. She said, and the same thing happened to me. Now, Woody Allen's attorney was on TV here, yesterday, I think it was the day before on the, either it was Anderson Cooper or it was Pierce Morgan, but he was, obviously, as one would imagine an attorney to do, he was defending his client, and he was saying that, and of course, taking pains not to indict Dylan Farrow, he was saying that she's the victim of brainwashing. And why? Because Mia Farrow was pissed off at Woody Allen because he was squiring about and getting ready to marry the adopted daughter of Mia Farrow, but not Woody Allen. That's the other thing that some people... they say that people got mistaken, that Woody Allen wasn't really marrying his stepdaughter. He was marrying Mia Farrow's adopted daughter. But he stormed back at his ex, Mia Farrow, angrily accusing her of manipulating his adopted daughter, Dylan, into believing she was molested by him when she was a child. "Of course I did not molest Dylan," said the 78-year-old director. He writes this in an op-ed piece that will appear in Sunday's New York Times. "I loved her and hope one day she will grasp how she's been cheated out of having a loving father and exploited by a mother more interested in her own festering anger than her daughter's well-being." In the detailed response to Dylan's claims of abuse when she was 7 years old, Allen says the allegations originated from Farrow, now 68, during their terribly acrimonious breakup 21 years ago when he began a relationship with her adopted daughter, Soon-Yi Previn. The self-serving transparency of her malevolence seems so obvious I didn't even hire a lawyer to defend myself, he writes. I naively thought the accusation would be dismissed out of hand because, of course, I hadn't molested Dylan, and any rational person would see the ploy for what it was. Instead, his raging adversary's accusations led to a police case, a lie detector test that he says he passed, but which Farrow didn't take, and a meticulous investigation by the Child Sexual Abuse Clinic of the Yale New Haven Hospital that he says cleared him. The district attorney was champing at the bit to prosecute a celebrity case, and Justice Elliot Wilkie, the custody judge, wrote a very irresponsible opinion saying, when it came to the molestation, we will probably never know what occurred, says Allen. The judge, Allen says, was quite rough on me out of disapproval of Allen's relationship with Soon Yi, who was in her 20s at the time when Allen was in his 50s. Allen and Soon Yi have now been married 16 years. He thought of me as an older improper, despite the fact that I loved her, and I can't see any of this. This has been, but you get the idea. So Woody Allen's going to have this op-ed piece. It's going to be in the Sunday New York Times, which will be on Sunday, and if you want, you can go check that out. But just keep one thing in mind. The claim that someone has been brainwashed, that it never happened, that they've been manipulated, this is ongoing. And no molester ever admits out of hand right away, oh, sure, yeah, that happened. I molested her. This stuff has to come out later on. We'll be back. World famous Phil Henry Show.
I don't know. I like Woody Allen.
World famous Phil Henry Show. So enough with the Woody Allen, man.
So we don't get to comment on the Woody Allen at all.
Well, it's very unseemly, and it's tragic. It's a lot of stuff. It involves a woman that was assaulted as a child. It involves, you know.
Well, I think that Woody Allen, you know, he.
What, bud? You what do you got to say about it, huh?
Well, you said some things during the commercial break that I think bear repeating. And I thought they were very intelligent, Phil. But I'm not qualified to repeat them because I can't remember them.
Why can't you remember them? Because they had the same effect on you they had on me. They were boring.
Yeah, well, that's it, yes.
Oh, they were boring. And you waited to say it now. Why?
I didn't wait. I was waiting for you to be quiet about it, Phil. And you didn't end your little speech until the commercial break was almost over.
Yes, and so I was going to say, if you want to know, I appreciate what you're saying, Phil, but please, please stop because it's boring me.
All right, you know what? I'm going to tell you this right now. Now I'm going to keep talking about it. Now you've pissed me off so much.
See, I told you.
Oh, baby.
Just, I'm going to... Oh, man.
I mean, you know, I feel that I agree with you. I agree with you that Dylan Farrow is, in fact, telling the truth.
I'm just going to say this, and then I don't want to talk about it. I'm going to talk about the Olympics. What is her incentive? And this whole thing about brainwashing, you know, well, she's brainwashed, 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 brainwashed. All right. Brainwashed. Now, that means that I personally feel this brainwashing has been so effective that even as an adult, the brainwashing continues, either it has kicked in, either she's continually brainwashed, or the original brainwashing was so great that it has maintained its hold on her mind. She's not a very independent thinking person. She's almost zombified by Mia Farrow, who's got her just repeating this party line and convincing her that something happened that didn't happen. Well, we know the opposite. A victim of molestation may be told it didn't happen, may be brainwashed into thinking it didn't happen, but they know that it did. And it's just a matter of them keeping the truth down. Mia Farrow, on the other hand, has been accused by Woody Allen of brainwashing her the opposite way. It did happen. It did happen. But it's the same truth that is being kept down. And it's the same truth that sort of motivates that individual to keep it hidden because they're afraid of what will happen if they speak the truth. Or we're supposed to believe that Dylan Farrow shares her mother's hatred of Woody Allen so much that she will make up lies about this guy to destroy his... But why? I understand Mia Farrow hating the guy's guts, but what about the kid? We seem to think that kids are so empty-headed and utterly and completely without any personality, any motivation on their own, that you can just fill their head full of anything, and for the rest of their lives, they're going to believe it and act on it and be that thing. They're like robots. They're like just... two-legged robots that you can program any way you want. We know from our experience with human nature and human beings that is not a real state. We know that people can be traumatized into acting, behaving, and even saying words that we want them to say. But we also know that we cannot eliminate from them what the reality is of their life and their experience. We know that molestation victims keep that inside of them, even as they are told to say it never happened, even as they speak those words that it didn't happen, out of fear that something will happen to them. They know. The same thing with this kid, this Dylan Farrow. If she is brainwashed into being told that she was molested, deep down she knows it didn't happen. She knows she's lying. She knows that she's being told by her mother and others to speak an untruth in order to wreck this man, because this man is deserving of being wrecked. Well, you know, Phil, I mean, she was told by her mother that the thing happened, and she believes it happened. She believes it happened. You mean to tell me that that woman, Mia Farrow, can get her daughter to actually believe and feel and sense and know that she was laying on her stomach, she was in front of a train set, her father molested her, he whispered in her ear, he said all these things, as she is, to this day, is sickened by the sight of trains because it reminds her of that day in that closet in that upstairs bedroom? I'm expected to believe that was entirely concocted by Mia Farrow, placed inside the brain of that kid, and she repeats it to this day as if it actually happened, when in point of fact it didn't. That's how traumatized and how brainwashed she is. Mia Farrow, man, she's going to go down in history as the greatest brainwasher since those cats and that Manchurian candidate. I mean, she's better than Big Brother, you know.
Who's that?
What do you mean, who's that?
That's the 1984 guy.
Yes, don't you remember Long Live Big Brother, 1984?
I'm not familiar.
Well, whatever, man. In Big Brother, the whole idea behind the 1984 Big Brother state was to convince you of the goodness and the truth of Big Brother, and then they'd execute you. See, what happened was they arrested these political dissenters. They arrested these thought criminals, as they call them in the world of 1984. You're a thought criminal. Like in Winston Smith's case, the hero of 1984, he had sex with this girl. He fell in love. He did the worst thing you could do. His loyalty fell away from Big Brother in the state, and it fell to his own selfish, base needs. He didn't even really... It wasn't really about him falling in love, because he said to her, he said to Julia, the character in 1984, he says, I don't want to love you. I just want to have sex. And he said to her, I don't want to know that you love me. I just want to know that you love the act of sex. And she tells him, I love it. So they want to take themselves as far away from purity and as far away from the Big Brother ideals and as far away from, they want to get right down in the mud, man. They want to get as far away from Big Brother as they can get. And so it's the base act of sex. And this is a state, the 1984 state, that has thought police. In other words, if you think something that is not approved by the state, you're a criminal. You can be arrested and you will be tortured. You will be tortured to the point where you now accept Big Brother in all of your being, in your heart, in your soul. You weep for the fact that you never loved Big Brother. You cry when you see Big Brother's portrait. You stand in the street and exhort Big Brother's name. You would go to your death for Big Brother. You now believe. You're a believer. You have been cured. You have been cleansed. And that's when the state takes you and kills you. They won't kill you until you are convinced. They won't kill you until you've been changed. They won't kill you until you've been cleansed. They will not send a thought criminal to his death if he still thinks these things. They will only send you to your death when you love Big Brother and you've repented and you now believe in the preeminence of the state. And that's what they did to Winston Smith, and that's what they did to Julia. And they did it by exploiting their fear. what is the one thing in the world that they fear more than anything else, and they got them to turn on each other by threatening them with that thing. Now, if Mia Farrow is that good...
Well, I don't think... Are you kidding? You think Mia Farrow is that good?
She'd have to be. She'd have to be. She'd have to be. She's got this kid believing and thinking that something happened right on down to the specifics of where she was, how her body position, what she was looking at, what room she was in, what her father was saying to her. I mean, right on down to those specifics, Mia Farrow has pumped that crap right into that kid's head, and that kid believes it, and that's what Woody Allen wants me to believe. Mia Farrow is as good as number one or whatever that guy was.
The guy in 1984, they should have called him number two on account of that's where he's from.
Well, isn't that... Oh, woo! That's just dirty.
You know, Bud, you are you nuts or something? You're saying that the guy in 1984 dropped out of someone's rear end? Why, that guy is good. He's better than good. He's the prince of effing darkness.
Well, I got to agree with the general, you know.
I got to agree with the general. Jesus.
Well, I do. All right, that's all I got to say about that, man.
Well, you said more about 1984 than you did about Woody Allen, which, by the way, I found it very interesting, Phil. I never read 1984, and...
Fine, Margaret, thank you. I got to take a break. We'll be back. Phil Henry Show. Excuse me. World-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. For those of you who follow the Bobby Dooley podcasts, Bobby Dooley is returning next week in full form. There has been a lag in the Bobby podcast as well as the new Steve Bozell Injustice Files podcast as we reorganize and retool the podcast. So it's all good, man. We're going to have more podcasts than ever before, but right now we're trying to figure out where we want to put them and how we want to do it. Bobby will be back. Don't worry. It's just one of these things. You know, I don't believe in just spilling this crap out there, because what happens is there is a confusion of content, and because we do have a paywall on our website and we want to respect our subscribers, we don't want to just start punching shit. Excuse my language. I guess you'll have to dump me there. I just said the S word.
Oh, my God. You get so relaxed. You say S and F and MF.
I never say MF. I apologize, folks. I didn't mean to say that. But we just spill this stuff out there, and sometimes it doesn't have any rhyme or reason. So we are trying to do a better job of curating. How's that for a 50-cent word, General?
I like curating is what you do to ham, isn't it?
What do you mean it's what you do to ham?
Are you listening to me?
I didn't say cure. I said curate.
Well, you curate. All right, that's fine. You don't curate ham.
No, you cure ham.
What? You cure ham? You cure ham? No, you don't cure ham.
But the ham got a disease.
Would you guys knock it off with the jokes, okay?
I don't think they're joking. I think they think you mean cure as in cure a disease.
Curing ham is to process the ham to either marinate it or to smoke it or to otherwise treat the ham so that it has a certain flavor. There's an aging process. You know what I'm saying? Haven't you ever seen a ham in a store that you buy?
What are you yelling about? You're all sitting there going, hey, I've seen a ham in the store. Yeah, I've seen a ham in the store.
You know what, Bud? The next thing you're going to see hanging from the butcher's rack there is you. You'll be seeing yourself because you'll be dead. So you'll be a ghost, and you'll see something hanging from a hook, and it'll be you.
Oh, my God, Phil, that's ghoulish.
Dude, shut up. You can't talk to me that way.
Well, then quit talking to me like you're a brain-dead idiot.
What do you mean he'll be a ghost?
Don't worry about it, General. All right, so curing ham. I don't even know what it was I was saying. I will just simply say that, so the podcasts are going to be properly curated. That was it, right?
Yes, you were saying curate as in what they done do, not done do, but what does what they do at a museum. What are you laughing at?
At a museum.
You know, Phil, don't make me out to be some Southern belle sitting there with a mint julep crammed.
All right.
I'm sorry.
With a mint julep crammed up your what?
Excuse me.
Uh-oh, she's pissed off.
What else is new? Are you kidding?
Yeah, she's angry every other show, isn't she?
Every other show?
No one has to sit still for that.
Right. You're right, Margaret. All right. So that's all I got to say about that. But
Well, we got a couple people on a Twitter said that they didn't know that about 1984, and they want to read that.
Yeah, read 1984. Whatever, you know. 1984 is fine. It's a great book, but it's so far from where the world's heading. It is. It's so far from where the world is. It's far from where America is headed. America is in the opposite direction, in my opinion. America is not in danger of a police state. America is in danger of anarchy. America is in far more danger of becoming a completely disassociated, fractured, and anarchist state or series of states than at any other time in its history. And this, you know, one of the things, there's a theory.
I want to be in on this.
Yes, have a seat, Margaret. You can't just walk in and out of here.
Well, I am listening to this. I want to be in on this.
There's a theory that the idea of individual liberty, while absolutely and completely honorable and an honorable goal of our society and has been since the founding of our country, individual liberty, individual freedom, the ability to life, you know, the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, while that is a very important thing, it also empowers antisocial thinking. Because if you think about it, an individual who is consistently and continuously all about himself, his family, you know, and everything that we may consider in our most cynical to be kind of rednecky, you know, I'm all about my family, my property, my home, my me, my moon, my cow, my this, my that, and all of the rest of you can stick it. That becomes very antisocial, and in the wrong individual, it becomes sadistically destructive, because that's exactly what a psychopath is. A psychopath is all about himself. And the reason why I'm bringing that up is because in societies where the opposite has traditionally been the case, where you are encouraged to be a part of a larger community, you're encouraged to contribute not just to your own family, but to the health, traditionally, say, of the village, and then the health of the community, and then the health, you know, kind of ever increasingly in these wider rings, responsible, for instance, in the to your elders. The Chinese Constitution makes it legally required that you take care of your grandparents, for instance. So this is a legal requirement in China that you are responsible for the well-being of your grandparents. So that's opposite in a lot of ways to what America has traditionally been about. Not that we encourage abusing our grandparents, I'm not saying that, but we leave it up to the individual to have the correct moral compass and the correct decision morally to make. However, in those societies like China and many of the Asian societies, the incidence of psychopathy and antisocial behavior is much, much lower than it is in Western societies such as our own.
Because they don't encourage...
Exactly, because they don't encourage this sort of independent me, I thinking. Now, yeah, it is true that a psychopath is a mutant. They're an abnormal person. There's no question about it. But even if you're a mutant and an abnormal person in a society where the responsibility to others is encouraged, your destructive tendencies are also sort of kept down or kept to a minimum. It's less likely you're going to act out in a psychopathic way than if you were living in America. Now, you know, there's probably crimes that happen in China that we don't have over here.
Well, like what? You talk about, like, the stuff that they have over there that we wouldn't like, what?
Well, what? Probably stealing a cow, or, well, not stealing a cow, but rifling the communal cow or something.
What do you mean, rifling the communal cow?
What's that mean?
I'm talking about the commune thinking is what they have over in the commie country. And if you rifle their cow...
What do you mean, rifle their cow?
You talking about, like, rifle a file?
Yes, over here you rifle files over there. You can rifle the fish tag, I don't know.
You mean like steal cows?
I don't know if I mean steal cows, but whatever they do communally, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either. So,
rifle a cow.
Oh, let it go, will you, Margaret, for God's sake?
Yeah, well, there must be something they do over there that's very much a part of their thing. So, I brought all that crap up to say whatever the hell it was I said. I don't know, but thank you very much.
Man, you're losing it, Mr. Henry. Did you get any sleep last night?
No, I did not get any sleep last night. Thank you for asking. No, I did not. I had to get up early and go to LAX. And I got to tell you something. I went to LAX this morning at like a bat out of hell because I was taking my friend to the airport for an 8 o'clock flight back to D.C. And I had said, well, I better be up and on the road by 6. No, not if the plane leaves at 8. You better not, man. You got to leave at least an hour earlier than that. You got to give yourself 2 hours to get to L.A., from the beach community up here of Port Hueneme and the Ventura County line, 2 hours, or brother, you are a dead man. So I get out of here at 5:15, pick her up, and I mean, I was hauling ass.
And you drove irresponsibly and could have killed someone. Yes, I heard the whole story.
No, I didn't drive irresponsibly. I drove fast, but I didn't drive irresponsibly, not at all.
Well, a lot of times people are coming in from out of town, man, and they think you're a madman, you know.
What are you talking about?
Well, there's a few people that came in from the Midwest that were driven around by you, Phil. I don't want to mention any names. But because they're not used to the mountains, they thought you were going to drive it off a cliff.
Who, me?
Yes.
Yeah, I've heard that before.
What do you mean, in from the Midwest?
That guy Scoop from Detroit.
What about him?
He thought he's not used to mountains and stuff.
So he thought I was going to drive it off a cliff? Man, you got to be kidding me.
Phil, if you're not used to driving on these California mountain roads, and you come from the flatlands, it'll scare six shades of turd out of you. Excuse me for saying.
Yes.
Six shades of turd. Boy, that's ladylike.
Yes, it is. It was the... My God, you're judgmental.
All right, Phil, I'm talking to myself, folks. Drunken Sochi hijack bid ends in Turkey. Turkey scrambled two F-16 jets to force down an airliner from the Ukraine after an apparently drunk would-be hijacker ordered it to Sochi, where the Winter Olympics opening ceremony was underway. Officials say this drunk from Ukraine, brandishing what he said was a detonator, tried to gain access to the cockpit of the aircraft, which had 110 people on board. We're going to get into this story and others when we come back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Our special Valentine's Day special is in effect, baby. Go to our website and get a Backstage Pass subscription for a year and get a gift subscription for 1 year free. And give it to your Valentine. Phil Henry Show. All right. Yeah. Phil Henry Show. So in Russia right now are the Olympics, and with the Olympics in Russia, just like Olympics in any other country, comes security. And have you ever heard the word security uttered more than you hear it uttered in these times? You know, somebody was saying to me, a much younger person than me, one of my girlfriends.
Oh, would you stop?
I'm kidding. No, someone said to me, can you imagine... During the Manson trial, there were members of the Manson family walking through the courthouse carrying knives. Can you imagine that? And I said, back then, yeah, I sort of can, because the cops in those days thought hippies were not violent people. Manson was violent, and the women that were on trial with him were violent, but the hippies were sort of seen as non-threatening. Otherwise, how do you answer for the fact that indeed there were members of the Manson family walking through that courthouse during those days of the trial with knives on them. And God knows, maybe even more deadly instruments than that. You know, what police force, what bailiff, what sheriff department would allow that? Well, it could only possibly be one that had no real concerns when it came to that kind of security. Such were the times. Such was America in 1969, 1970. Today, we couldn't even fathom it. Back then, yeah, you know. Today, we talk about, and I'm a member of a generation that straddles both eras. Now, most of the people listening to me right now, you guys don't remember a time when there wasn't a concern about security. You don't remember a time where there wasn't somebody with a microscope up your ass every time you tried to get on an airplane, every time you tried to put a bag in an aircraft, every time you tried to check in. There's always this 5, 6, 7, 8 different places where somebody's checking your ID, making sure you're going through a scanner, making sure that the bag is x-rayed, making sure your carry-on's x-rayed, making sure you don't have a big carry-on, making sure you don't have a little tiny carry-on, making sure you don't have a little tiny,
whatever.
Right. And like that, man, you know, it's these are the times we live in. In Russia, they have a security force that they seem to think, and the rest of the world agrees, is one of the most badass bunch of guys that the world has ever known. They're called, in varying configurations and units, they're called Spetsnaz. Spetsnaz. Don't ask me what it means.
What's it mean?
I don't know.
Well, Spetsnaz is a security force not unlike our own, SEAL teams.
Yeah. Yeah, they are, and they're and I'm not putting down the SEALs, because they're badass guys, but these Spetsnaz guys pride themselves, or so they say, on not relying on so much technology. The SEALs have lots and lots of weapons and toys and Velcro and this and that and sights and scopes and knives, and the Spetsnaz guys train. And maybe the SEALs do as well. I have no reason to believe that they... How much hand-to-hand do they do, General?
Who are you talking about?
The SEALs.
The SEALs?
Yes, the ones in the Navy.
Oh, all right.
Who were you talking about?
Well, I was talking about the SEALs, but then you started talking about hand-to-hand, and I was thinking about the SEALs SEAL Land, or whatever it's called.
What's SEAL Land?
Wherever the SEALs live.
You mean the ocean SEALs?
Yeah, the ones with the fins.
Right. Because you said hand-to-hand, I'm thinking, well, there's no hands that I'm aware of. There's fins. And I know it sounds stupid.
All right, we're talking about one thing here and one thing only, and we're talking about paramilitary forces.
Yes, all right. Well, the SEALs are trained in hand-to-hand, as is Delta Force, which is the, ostensibly, is the Army... special forces.
So Delta Force is under the aegis of the U.S. Army, correct?
But for the most part, yes. The SEALs are the Navy. The U.S. Air Force, they have their special forces, and so it goes. The Marines have recon, and I think the Marines have an even more specialized force than recon.
What's it called?
I don't know. The Marine special forces is something very imposing. It's like Marine Death Squad 5, or... I think it's Death Squad 5.
Are you kidding?
Do I look like I'm kidding?
All right, no, hold on, General. Don't get pissed off.
She's asking me if I'm kidding.
Well, what do you mean, Death Squad 5?
The Marine Special Forces, just as the Air Force.
What about a Coast Guard?
I don't know about the... Yes, I guess the Coast Guard has some unit of bloodthirsty cutthroat animals, yes.
The Coast Guard has a unit of bloodthirsty cutthroat animals.
Well, I'm not calling them that. What I'm trying to say to you is the Marines have the blood and guts, the bucket of guts brigade. I don't know what...
What are you laughing at?
I doubt if the Marines have some force called the bucket of guts brigade.
Well, you know the Marines are very, very tough.
Yeah, I'm sure they are, but I'm not saying they're not tough. I'm saying they probably, if they've got a special forces, it's probably got a more professional name than... Death Squad 5.
What are you laughing at?
I'm laughing at Death Squad 5. Anyway, the Russians have Spetsnaz. Let's just talk about them. They, because I've heard them interviewed, they pride themselves on their manual, the hand-to-hand, the martial arts. The martial arts, what we call the martial arts. And martial arts, as you know, is not just judo. And it's also good old-fashioned pugilism, using your fists. And the use of the knife. And they are very proud of that. And if you talk to a Spetsnaz soldier, he will tell you that they're about as effective as any guy, any fighting man in the world, using their particular methods. Now, they're also outstanding riflemen and all of the things that you would expect of a special forces unit. And it was Spetsnaz that went into that theater in Moscow that had been taken over by Chechenian terrorists. And you know the story. They had suicide bombers. These were females, Muslim females, who had suicide bombs strapped to them. They also had other terrorists that had fanned out inside the theater and were keeping the crowd under control. They had a command structure of some kind where the commanding members of this terrorist group were in some upstairs offices in this theater. And they pretty much had this entire theater under their control. And into this came... the Spetsnaz force, and within minutes had killed all of them and had saved the lives of the people inside.
Now, hold on. These are the people that died, though.
Now, hold on. You haven't heard the whole story. Hold on.
I know the story.
What happened to those people, and the story has not probably been as fully told as it should be. The Spetsnaz guys did a brilliant job. They went in and killed all these terrorists, saved everybody's life. They had a little bit of luck, and I guess you hear any of those guys say you got to have some luck. And one of the lucky things that happened is I think at least one of these so-called black widows, these Muslim women that had the suicide bombs, at least one or two of their bomb packs misfired. They didn't go off. I think one of the women tried to detonate. She couldn't, and of course they were all killed by the riflemen with this Spetsnaz force. They went upstairs, they cornered the leader of this unit, and they got into a brief firefight and killed him. Now the job is done, and in come the paramedics. And they're being assisted by some of these soldiers because they need every swing and you-know-what, as the saying goes. The paramedics are the ones that blew it, because what happened was a certain kind of nerve gas had been pumped into the building to assist in knocking out or otherwise sort of neutralizing to some degree the terrorists. Now, a lot of the people were affected, too, and as they brought them out onto the sidewalk, they laid them on their backs, which is a no-no. The air was cold. Laying them on their backs combined with the cold air that they were breathing caused a lot of these people to suffocate because of this nerve gas that they had ingested. They should have been laid on their sides. The responding paramedical units were at fault. They had not been briefed. Either they hadn't been briefed on what was being used in terms of the gas, or they just simply didn't know what they were doing. But either way, it was the way these people were, I guess the word is triage, that caused their death. And a lot of people died as the direct result of just being laid on their back in that cold air outside the theater, having breathed this nerve gas. They were not killed as the result of the Spetsnaz guys and what they did. Those men saved their lives. But if you hear these men interviewed to this day, they are saddened by the fact that people died. And they're saddened by the fact that they don't think it was a 100% success because the lives of those people were not 100% saved. Even though it wasn't their fault, they were not at fault. They still consider the mission to be compromised and that they didn't succeed. And it's too bad because it wasn't...
This was not their fault.
No, it wasn't their fault. They'd done their job. The paramedics, the medical staff, the rescuers that came in did not handle these injured and gassed people properly. And so it's a very interesting and kind of, you feel for these guys when they're interviewed in later years saying, and not only that, they're perceived to have caused the death of those people. They're perceived to have been less than professional because some of these people died and somehow these Spetsnaz guys did it. They didn't. It was their end of the operation was a 150% success. And then it was after the fact, after the terrorists had been killed, that the people died from this, not from the gas. The gas didn't kill them. It was the way they were handled outside the theater in the cold night air that ultimately caused them to suffocate.
Well, someone should publicize this, Phil.
Yeah, they did. He had it on a military channel and everything.
That's where I saw it. I saw it on a military channel.
Oh, that's why you watch that goofy thing. I don't watch it because I was in the military for 40 damn years. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it, I tell you.
Take it easy, will you?
Uh-oh.
What?
Do you have a beer?
I had one beer.
Oh, okay, that's why he's acting like a jackball. What kind of beer was it?
Schlitz malt liquor.
Okay,
Well, there you go.
Yeah, all right, so we're going to be back here on the Phil Henry Show. I promised you a rundown here on the Olympics and... Maybe we'll get some, can we get a medal count, or is that happening?
Yeah, some of the events maybe is done.
I don't know. Well, we'll find out here. Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Back with a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of the Olympic results and more news. Show and PhilHenryShow.com. Yeah. as well as TuneIn. If you have a, everybody has a smartphone. Everyone has a smartphone. So the thing that people are now realizing is the smartphone is where you can not only, you know, use your phone and have access to the internet, you can also listen to audio entertainment. You can watch TV. The smartphone that I have in my hand here, for those of you on Phil TV, you're looking right there at a picture of our radio show on my phone. There's also a listen live feature. This is now, if you lose this, you're almost losing something as valuable as your wallet. You know, you lose your phone or you lose your wallet, you have lost a big chunk of your life because all of your information, you know.
Well, everybody has in their wallet all of their credit cards, but your credit cards can be canceled. On the phone.
Yeah.
Excuse me, I'm not done talking, bud. On the phone is everything. Phone numbers, the names of people, and so on and so forth, you see. So,
Yes?
That's all. You don't have to sit there all staring at... What is everyone staring at me for?
Well, Margaret, when Bud was going to say something, you go, excuse me, you know...
I had more to say. Now I'm done. What do you want, Bud?
Well, I was going to say that... Well, forget it.
What did you want to say, Bud?
Nothing.
What did you want when you interrupted her?
Nothing.
Well, then what did you interrupt her for?
I just want to see if I could.
Will you get out of here, man? God.
Swear to God, Phil, you're going to have to save me from a homicide charge.
You know, Margaret, one of these days people are going to believe you.
I hope they do.
Wow.
What does that mean?
It means what it sounded like. Wow. That's what it means. Harvey Wireman is going to join us here in a moment to, because we did want him on the line here to give us some legal opinion. And this was actually suggested by my close personal friend, Nikki McKee here. Our technical director, she said, get Harvey in here so we can make some kind of sense out of this rotten show you're doing. I'm kidding, Nikki. I know she didn't say that. Harvey, how you doing tonight?
Yeah, this is Harvey Wireman.
Harvey, how you doing? It's Phil.
Yeah, I'm doing great.
I wanted to ask you a question. I think it's a pretty good question. And it has to do with the Dylan Farrow thing. Do you know about this?
Yeah, the Dylan Farrow, she's the daughter of Mickey Farrow, right?
Mickey Farrell, who's that?
The one that married Woody.
Oh, what are you talking of? Mia Farrell.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, Mia Farrell. She's the one that married Woody, right?
Woody.
Right, yeah, Woody. And I can't remember his last name, but he...
Woody Allen.
Woody Allen. All right. And he was a jazz... Not jazz. He made movies, but he had the name of Woody... wasn't Woody, Woody Herman, right?
No, it was Woody Allen, the movie maker.
You're thinking of Woody Herman, who played the clarinet.
He played the clarinet. Now you've lost me. I don't know who. What guy plays the clarinet?
Woody Herman played the clarinet. Herman? Woody Herman?
Oh, okay, yeah. That's. But he wasn't married to that. He's not a pervert. It was this guy, Woody, right?
Woody Allen.
I understand Woody Allen. I got that concept. Is the general there?
I'm right. Yes, I'm right here, Harvey. Woody Allen is the guy we're talking about, not Woody Herman.
No, Woody Herman wasn't a pervert, as far as I knew, unless you want to fill me in on something different, General.
No, Woody Herman was not a pervert.
You know, there was a cartoon character, and I said to somebody, I was talking to Dean Purcell, one of my law clerks, I said, look, you know Woody Woodpecker, and he goes, ha ha, yeah. I said, how's about it if he was a pervert? And he said, well, you know, he was pecking wood. And I said, boy, you got that right. And we had it was a kind of a cute moment.
All right, we have with us here Harvey Wireman. He's an attorney, has done a great deal of, he's a criminal defense attorney by training. Harvey, in recent years, I know you're in semi-retirement. You've done some pro bono work for the ACLU. And you are often on our program to give us some advice. The question that we have for you, and I think it's a pretty good question, why can't Woody Allen sue for defamation or libel or some combination thereof, given these, from his point of view, these outrageous accusations against him?
Well, it's a, you know, libel is a tricky thing. The first thing that you've got to do when you want to prove libel is you have to prove it. The burden of proof is on the individual in a civil case. The burden of proof is on the individual that is suing, just as the burden of proof is on the prosecution in a criminal case. So if you bring a lawsuit, you have to prove two things. Number one, that your reputation can be damaged. That's number one. Number two, that your reputation has been damaged, and you have to quantify that. You have to come up with a actual, number, or you have to come up with an actual set of facts and numbers that prove that there was real damage done to your reputation. And then three, you have to prove the veracity of the remarks, because it's not slander or libel if it's true.
Okay, that's an interesting point. So if he can't sue Mia Farrow and win, if what she... And who does he sue here? Does he sue his daughter?
I think it's rather unseemly to sue the daughter, because what you're... Woody Allen is saying...
His name is Woody. You've asked me to correct you if you mispronounced.
I appreciate it, Phil. Woody. Woody. Well, I know it's not Woodpecker.
Woody Allen, Harvey. It's Woody Allen.
Woody Allen. I'm sorry. Woody Allen. It would be very unseemly for him to bring an action, a civil action, against the very daughter that is the center of this. She would be viewed as being victimized yet again. Woody Allen himself, I'm sure, would not want to make her the object of his claim of damage. His claim of damage is against the ex-wife, Mike Farrell. Not Mike. It's a woman, right? He was married to a woman.
Yeah, he's married to Mia Farrell.
Mia Farrell. I apologize.
He was married. Woody Allen likes girl. He likes women. He's straight.
I know it, and I know that, and I know he's had a thing for, the thing about Woody Allen is he's had a thing for young women for a long time, and that doesn't help him either. If you look at his movies, they are populated with underage, almost prepubescent, miniskirt wearing, bob haircut, pigtail, 12 years old going on 40. I mean, it is a veritable slideshow of quasi porn, the likes of which.
All right, hold on. We got to take a break. Can you hang with me through the news, Harvey?
Can I hang what?
Can you hang with me? Hold on. Put him on. Would you tell him?
Yeah, Mr. Wireman, can you
do it during the break? We'll be right back. We have Harvey Wireman with us. What are you looking at, Margaret?
Why do you you know that the old man is.
He has never indicated to me anything other than he likes being on the show and he likes to comment on these things.
Yes, I heard him say that, Margaret.
Well, I think you're taking advantage of the poor old fool, because I think he's retired and he is... What is that?
Music. It's our bumper music. We're going out.
You and I are going out.
Boom, boom, boom.
We're going out of the...
I'm sorry.
Down.
All right, anyway.
Right on for your feet.
This music's very sexual. It's very distracting.
With me?
Yeah. So,
Put you in my house.
Oh, God.
Anyway, we'll be right back.
Boom.
All right, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. And I was looking for a John Lee Hooker song, Margaret, called Annie May.
Well, I heard what Nikki said, that it's going to fluster me. I don't like being taken advantage of that. Nikki is a female. It's just she understands.
Well, what do you mean? You sound like you're a blues fan.
I am very much a blues fan. I'm also very much a John Lee Hooker fan. And if you must know...
Oh, don't know. No, don't say it.
What? Excuse me. Say what?
Please don't tell us that you slept with John Lee Hooker.
I'm not going to say that. How dare you?
Well, we can tell.
Margaret, we know you've got a story to tell.
You don't say you slept with John Lee Hooker.
I did not sleep with John Lee Hooker. But I could have.
Oh, God.
Well, what is that? Oh, boy, you guys are really begging for it tonight.
Well, Margaret, John Lee Hooker to me is a giant. He's a legend. He's, there's nothing against you. I just don't want to think of him as sleeping around and...
Well, I'm sorry, Phil, to have to disabuse you of the notion.
Well, you don't know that for a fact, and I don't... You know what? I don't want to... Speaking of being sued, that's why we have Harvey Wireman on the line here, folks. Because Harvey is going to be talking to us about the possibility of a libel action being brought by, as Harvey calls him, Woody Allen.
So, making fun of the old man, huh?
Hey, let's not change the subject about John Lee Hooker. Now, what's the story?
Well, Phil, don't interrogate me like I'm some punk out of off the street and you're a cop.
What's the story?
I met him. You know that I sang some studio backup work back in the day in New York. I met him. We all went out to dinner that night, had a great time, and I noticed that there was some tension between the two of us.
Oh, my ass. My ass.
General, how dare you?
No, I'm sorry. My bare ass. I don't believe it. I refuse. I'm like Phil. I admire John Lee Hooker. And you saying that you almost, that there was tension, my bare
ass?
Yes.
All right.
What's that mean, anyway?
In other words, I'm putting my ass up as collateral against her line of horse dung.
I didn't say I slept with John Lee Hooker. I said there was tension in the room.
And I'm telling you, I'm putting my ass up as collateral.
Okay. Well,
Well, I guess the conversation's over there, isn't it?
Over there?
I mean, over then.
General, your move.
Well, that's my... By the way, that's my lockout, and I saw someone comment on that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We were giving our various lockouts. Yours is I'm Margaret Gray, and I forget what mine was, but yours, General, was I'm General Galen Shaw, your move.
Well, what do you find funny about that?
General, you're supposed to say, I'm General Galen Shaw.
Well, mine is, I'm General Galen Shaw, your move. Well, you can laugh all you want, laughing boy.
Well, to me, it's funny. All right, we do have, I forget who else we were talking to.
Well, I think we were talking to, I was going to say, I'm Robert, what's my last name?
First name's Leonard. God, what a moron. You don't even know your last name.
Shut up, man. I'm thinking ahead of what my lockout's going to be. I'm Robert Leonard, and that's the way it is.
You can't do that. That was Walter Cronkite.
Walter Cronkite said that's the way it is.
Yeah, why can't I do it?
Well, you can, but it's not exactly an original lockout. You know, Walter Cronkite had a great lockout. And that's the way it is. Da-da-da-da, give the date. I'm Walter Cronkite. Good night.
Well, you say he said that's the way it is. Then he gave his name.
It doesn't matter. It's still his. What's yours, Bud?
I'm Bud Dickman. We'll be back tomorrow, and then it'll be. Then I'll say something different.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm Bud Dickman. We'll be back tomorrow, and then I'll say something. I love that. But I love you, Bud.
Well,
that's good, Bud.
What about you?
I'm Phil Hendry. Thank you. God bless, and let's drink. How about that?
Oh, that's beneath you. That's beneath you.
It makes you sound like you're an Irish thug. Let's drink.
Oh, I see. But I'm General Galen Shaw, your move.
Oh, I don't know why you find that funny.
It's just great. I don't find it funny so much as I'm blown away by how magnificent it is. All right. Harvey Wireman joins us, and God forbid I would ask Harvey, I guess I ought to ask Harvey. Harvey, what do you, if you were to lock out on this show with your own, what would it be? If you were to lock out on the show with your own personal, signature, we call it a lockout. Remember Paul Harvey used to say, Paul Harvey, good day?
Oh, yeah, well, Paul Harvey, he was an original Paul Harvey, but I would simply say... I'm Paul Harvey. Good day.
You're not Paul. No, you're locking out as Harvey Wireman.
I'm locking out as Harvey Wireman. Well, I don't know what that means.
Okay, never mind.
No, I know. Yeah. I would say I'm Harvey Wireman, and I'm not. I'd say I'm not Paul Harvey. I'm Harvey Wireman. How's that?
That's great. That's great.
Love it. Love it. Can't live without it.
I like it.
All right. It's unanimous. So what about this guy, Woody Allen?
All right, we're talking with Harvey Weinman about Woody Allen and discussing the possibility that he can sue for libel. And I think it's a fair question. If what he says is true, and in your experience, do you have any comment on that?
On whether what he's saying is true, and I have no comment. I wouldn't want, Phil, I'm a lawyer, and until I see every ounce of fact in this case laid out in front of me in meticulous fashion, and every single solitary piece of testimony laid out in front of me, and every single solitary piece of physical evidence, and the timeline, and the testimony of individuals that may have knowledge of these events, I will not, nor can I, make any statement as to the veracity or lack thereof.
So that's when you would go out and begin to amass that information, right?
When I would go out and do what?
When you'd go out and amass and gather that information.
No, I didn't say I'd go out and get it. I said until I see it. But that's pretty funny. You think I'm going to get out of bed on a Saturday morning and go out and hump that stuff? No. No, you've got a hole. Brother, you need an education on Harvey Weinman. I don't get out of bed before 12 o'clock unless it is signed, sealed, and delivered. And I don't do that. I've got a group of what do you want to call, operatives. I have a...
Get like a private detective like they done had in Matlock and everything?
Do I have a... What did he say?
Do you have a private investor? You have guys like that working for you?
Oh, yeah. We contract with a bunch of different guys. Mike Billing and... well, I don't want to say their names because they're incognito.
Incognito?
Yeah, incognito. But no, I don't... I won't get out of bed. I don't crawl out of bed for anything other than an absolute sure win. And if someone gets me out of bed for a loss, I go right back to bed. And I don't wake up until someone guarantees me a win. So I've been in a coma. I'm kidding.
All right, so what about Woody Allen and his chances of filing a libel action against Mia Farrow?
I think he'd be a moron to do it. I think that there's no win in that. There's no win at all. And that's why he hasn't done it. Because... You can't prove it, Phil. You can say that it isn't true, and you can say that she trumped up the charges. You can say that she has invented these charges. But how do you actually prove, even if they're not true? And you have your opinion, I have mine. You got to prove that she is the one that instigated, built, constructed, and endorsed. In the mind of this daughter, this odious tale, and that she reinforced it over time, and that she was the primary motivator to the life of this lie. It seems impossible to me. I wouldn't touch it with a ten. I wouldn't touch it with your lips. And
all right. So it's an impossibility.
What does that mean? You wouldn't touch it with his lips,
Margaret? You know something? You ask all these questions. I gotta say, I love you and I love your husband. You're a pain in the ass sometimes.
How dare you?
Yeah, how dare you? Are a pain in the ass with your questions. Just let me talk, okay? Because I'm going down to Ted's of Beverly Hills, and I know Frank's gonna be there.
Well, now Frank Gray is no one to trifle with.
Hey! Frank Gray is a great lawyer. But I'm the big dog on the block, right?
Yes, right.
All right.
Wow.
You know something? He's a bully.
Oh, come on, will you? You know the guy as well as I do. He's going to say what he's going to say. And what are you, Margaret? You going to muscle him? He's Harvey Weinman. He's one of the heavy hitters in town, okay? He's bigger than Frank. He's bigger than Ted. He's bigger than anybody. He was bigger than Johnny Cochran. Even Johnny Cochran said that Harvey Weinman was untouchable.
Well, God rest Johnny's soul.
Harvey loved Johnny, but Harvey's one of the bad boys. You can't go near him, okay? And he's a pretty fair guy, but he's senile, you know.
I was going to say, his mind is coming unglued.
Yeah, Harvey's brain is coming apart. There's no question about it. But still, even in the state that he's in, he can still, size things up. Pretty good.
I don't like some of the stuff the old man says.
All right, well, then you tell him yourself, okay?
Yeah, you tell him, because we're not going to tell him.
Yeah, you tell him.
Okay, I guess it's unanimous that I tell him. All these big, strong men, but I'll tell him. No problem. Why don't you stick it up?
All right, we'll be right back here on the Phil Henry Show. Every single solitary show with you, man. It never ends, Margaret.
I show up to work. I don't show up here to lick someone's ass.
Wow. We'll be back. World famous Phil Henry Show. Wow. Welcome back to the Phil Henry Show and PhilHenryShow.com. And we have a song here, Margaret, I'm told that you will love.
A song that I love?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is recommended by our close personal friend, Miss McKee. She says this is something. Now, I know you're a John Lee Hooker fan, right?
Oh, anime. How dare you play this song?
I need you night and day.
Oh, I know. This is a great song.
How dare you play this song? This
anime, anime.
Oh.
Ooh, God.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Anime. Oh.
Would you not do that, please?
Oh.
Would you not do that, Margaret?
Anime.
Margaret, you're rubbing your... She's rubbing herself.
To ever leave
Turn it
by
off,
myself.
Bud.
I can't...
Turn it off, bud.
The knob won't budge.
Blow it up.
Anime, anime.
Tear it off. Do something, man, but turn it off. She's rubbing herself on the table.
Leave me
oh, God. Turn it off!
What are you doing, man?
I couldn't do it.
Where'd the music go? Where did it go?
Margaret, you're acting like an animal.
I'm acting like an animal. Do you? Here it is.
Oh, God. Ooh!
My God, it's like something out of the jungle.
Margaret, please don't do that on the brand new table that we just waxed.
Oh, God.
You.
Yikes.
I can't live without you.
This, oh, God, I remember this. Oh, God, do I remember this. Oh.
Okay, would you knock it off?
The cellar door, 1987. Oh.
You want me to re-wax the table tomorrow? Okay, thank you very much. That John Lee Hooker, Annie Mae.
Like I don't know it. Like I don't know this song backwards and forwards. When he sang this song, you can say what you want. When he sang this song at the cellar door, 1987, he was looking straight at me.
Oh, no.
Oh, bullcrap.
Turn it off. Turn
when
the music
you're gone,
off.
When you're gone.
Turn that filth off. Turn the filth. Thank you.
What do you mean, turn the filth off?
He ruined the mood. He ruined it.
How did I ruin the mood?
Oh, bullcrap. You talk about senile, General.
Oh, Margaret, you're acting like some sort of a banshee in heat. You're rubbing yourself all over everything.
I was listening to the music. I'm a woman. Don't ever forget that. I'm a woman.
Yeah, you're grossing everybody out and everything like that.
Don't you wish you knew the things that I'm feeling as a woman? I'm W-O... M-I-N. Woman. I mean W-O-M...
W-O-M...
I said W-O-M-A-N.
No, W-O-M-E-N.
No, that's plural. I'm woman. W-O-M-U-N or...
W-O-M-A-N. God almighty.
You know, General, it occurs to me that you must be jealous or something. I think you've got a thing for me.
Yes, I do. I do have a thing for you. It's called a euthanasia table.
Turn the filth, turn the garbage, turn that stinking, filthy racial...
Oh, man! Where did she go?
She walked out!
Boy, she went from being in love with John Lee Hooker to calling it dirty, filthy, racial...
I've never been more insulted in my life.
You said I had a thing for you.
Yes, and you said it was a euthanasia table.
You, anime.
Yes, but it was funnier when I said it.
It's my pride and joy.
Yeah.
How dare you go yeah to John Lee Hooker's music? Only I can feel the rhythm and the blues and the low down blues. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, Margaret.
Yeah, I know, Margaret.
You know, Phil, I hope the day comes when you truly do appreciate this music and you just don't play it for the to be a big shot in your apartment complex. God, I hate it when you laugh at me.
Well, John Lee Hooker's laughing at you.
Tommy Hooker.
All right, Margaret. All right, enough of that nonsense.
Oh, stop.
No, enough of it. Okay, turn it down, bud. So you like John Lee Hooker. I mean, I like John Lee Hooker, too, you know, but I'm not rubbing myself in the table leg.
You know something, Phil? It wasn't anything you had to point out to the audience. How dare you?
Margaret, everybody's seen it in here, and it's grossing everybody out.
Well, isn't that too bad, little boy, that you're grossed out by a woman? Woman.
Yeah.
No, I want all of you to understand something. I'm a woman, and when I hear music that motivates, inspires, and yes, even begins to pulse the very blood through my heart, you're all going to just have to sit there and take it. Because I'm a woman. Yes, W-O. Don't do it, Phil.
All right, I was going to help you.
W-O-M-U-N. A-N.
Yes.
Look at them. They're all, ladies and gentlemen, all four of them are going, what children?
Margaret, yeah, there she goes, you know.
Margaret, the white owls are in your car.
What?
The cigars are in your car.
Thank you.
It's funny because, you know, she can't spell woman, but that's what she is, W-O-M-A-N.
Yeah, and then she's all, you know, I'm a woman. What's that mean?
Because she digs the music, that's fine. All right. You know, women are going to be, women are going to be women. You got to just get out of the way when they're doing that.
Yeah, what's that supposed to mean?
Get out of the way when they're doing it, man. That's all I can tell you. When a woman is going to be a woman, just either, you know, get in line and start, you know, partying along with her, or get out of the way because they're going to do what they're going to do. And if she wants to dance to the music, you know, all I'm asking is that,
I'm listening to everything you're saying.
Well, good, Margaret, because all I'm asking you is if you want to, you know, get down with John Lee Hooker, do me a favor and don't hike your skirt up and rub yourself on the table.
I didn't do anything of the sort. That is absolute libel. Get my husband on the phone, please.
Good, good. I hope. You want to sue me?
I'll talk to my husband, thank you. Get my husband on the phone, please.
Good. You going to sue me?
Get my husband on the phone, please.
Let's get Frank on the phone so we can hear him talk about she and he and he and she.
You're really jealous, aren't you, Phil?
Yeah, that's it, Margaret. I'm jealous. Why do you got to make a big controversial thing out of this? Okay, all I said was, well, you heard what I said.
Yes, about 19 times.
Yeah, I got Frank Gray on the phone. Whenever you're ready to talk to Frank Gray, he's on the phone. Hey, Frank? Yeah, Margaret was rubbing herself on the table and everything.
give me that phone, you animal. Frank.
Yeah, Frank Gray. Well, Margaret, what's going on?
Frank, I was here listening to John Lee Hooker's Annie Mae.
Oh, God almighty.
What is your problem?
Margaret, you know what happens every time you hear her sing that song. Every time you hear her sing that, you know what you do. You start rubbing yourself on tables. God.
Well, is Phil Hendry allowed to mock me while I do that?
Well, you can. How can you blame her? She's going to laugh, and so are the other guys in the room. They're all going to laugh, too. But if you're listening to John Lee Hooker singing Annie Mae about a woman that she loved, and there you are, rubbing yourself on everything that isn't nailed down, of course she's going to laugh and sing and dance and play, or whatever she did.
We're talking about Phil right now.
Yeah, I know that.
Well, he didn't dance and sing and play.
Well, but see, Margaret, understand something, darling. I love you. But every time we have every time we have people over for cocktails on a Friday evening, with the pool lights on and the sound of the whippoorwill, I don't even know what I'm talking about now.
All right, tell you what, why don't you hang up? Hang on. Don't hang up.
Okay, goodbye.
Why did you tell him to hang up?
I meant to say hang on, call him back. What is it with him and the whippoorwill?
He's talking about when we have people over to entertain. It's what we do. We like to have people over. We had Salman Rushdie over 2 years ago.
Wow.
Well, if you knew how to read, bud, you'd know what that meant.
All right, Margaret, I know you do entertaining. I'm just saying that, you know, we have to take a break. We'll get Frank back on the line. Oh, my God, what a night. Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com, back with Frank Gray, and Margaret now wants to sue me because she's the one that was taking the polish off the table dancing to Annie Mae. Wow. Man.
She moves like an angel.
Welcome back to World Famous Phil Henry Show. Margaret, this is the song you sang on?
Yes, I sang on this song with Ellen Foley back in the late 1980s. This is 1979 in New York. And this is me and Ellen Foley singing on this song.
And this is who?
This is Blue Oyster Cult.
Oh.
Who's Blue Oyster Cult?
Would you shut up, please?
Quiet, bud.
There's me and Ellen right there.
Oh, yeah.
Is that, oh, wow. Is that you, Margaret? That sounds wonderful.
Thank you, General.
I don't know about a cult.
It's not a cult, Bud. God, you know, Bud, damn you to hell. I'm trying to listen to my music.
You said it's a cult.
All right, turn it down. I like that song, too. It's one of my favorite Blue Oyster Cult songs, Margaret. I didn't know you were on that song, but...
Well, it was Frank got me the gig. I was very young. And you know Frank's a good deal older than me.
Yeah.
What? Bud, watch it.
Bud.
Now, what was your problem?
You said it's a cult.
That's the name of the band, you clown. The Blue Oyster Cult.
It doesn't make any difference. What they've said that cults do to you.
Look at you, moron. It's a band. It ain't a cult. So don't put it together with cults. It's got nothing to do with Jim Jones or Blue Oysters. Why, do you think it's a cult that worships Blue Oysters? Is that it?
What?
Well, Bud, we're asking you a question, you numbskull. Do you think that the Blue Oyster Cult is a cult that worships oysters?
Your voice is cracking, General.
I'm sorry.
Give him some water. Is that what you think, Bud?
No, just you were the one that was talking about a cult.
I was talking to you idiots about the Jim Jones and those guys. Man, nothing to do with a band. All right, Harvey Wireman on the line with us from San Marino, California, as we continue this very fractured, but nonetheless, we press ahead. The conversation we're having here about the Woody Allen, the possibility of a, excuse me, a libel action. You made a very good point there, Harvey, before we went to the break. You said that it would not make much sense tactically, strategically, to sue his daughter for libel. But you also made the point that the person that you would sue, Mia Farrow, is almost a sure loss.
Well, yeah, and the reason why I say it's a sure loss is because you have to prove. You can say, it's an easy thing to say in public, well, Mickey Farrow or Mila Farrow, what is her name again, Phil? I'm sorry.
Mia Farrow.
Yeah, you can say Mia Farrow. What am I doing here? I thought Frank was going to be on the line.
Oh, yeah. What happened to Frank?
Where's my husband, please?
I'm sorry. Did we call you back?
Yeah, someone called me back and said that you were just having a conversation with me, and I know that you weren't because you hung up on me.
It's Frank. Great. Where's Frank?
I hung up on him.
Get him back.
Yes, I want to talk to my husband about suing you. That's right.
Thank you very much, Harvey. Harvey?
It sounds like he fell asleep.
Yeah, okay, just...
Frank? All right, I've got to call Frank back.
You know something, Bud? If your brain wasn't inside your head, you'd have it in a playpen someplace, swinging it as a mobile and...
Well, I don't even understand what you said. Yeah, Frank.
Oh. Hey, Frank, how you doing?
Hey, is this the Henry Show?
Yeah, Frank.
What the hell happened? I was just talking to my wife, and all of a sudden I'm talking to Dickman again, and she says that you guys wanted to talk to me, and I said, well, I was talking to Henry, and she said, hang on, and then I'm talking to Dickman, and she says, what happened to you?
Frank, they hung up on you by mistake, and they got Harvey on the line.
Well, I got better things to do than pull it and paddle it and look at it and paddle it some more. You understand? I got better things to do than do that to her.
Her?
I have a nickname for my...
All right, Frank, we don't have to go there. The question is, Phil said that I rubbed the furniture raw listening to Annie Mae by John Lee Hooker. Now, I know you know that I know... No, you know what I do or what I did do.
Let me tell the story. Do you mind, Margaret?
Well, what I'm saying, Frank, I know...
Let me tell the story. Do you mind, Margaret?
No, I don't mind, Frank.
Thank you. All right, so anyway, he's at the cellar door. Margaret and I went. He had
We've been in New York off and on, Phil. As you know, he just played for you, Blue Meanie Band, the Blue Oyster Cult. Now,
who's the Blue Meanie Band?
That was my nickname for them because Buck Dharma, I used to say to her, you know, Buck, you play one hell of a guitar, but naming bands ain't exactly up your main address, you know. And she looked at me and kind of went, ha, 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 and gave me the finger. Anyway.
Uh-huh.
So I said to Margaret, let's go to the cellar door. We were in New York, and he said, okay. And so we go to the cellar, John Lee Hooker. Well, I love her, and Margaret does too. So we go in. We get two ringside seats for John Lee Hooker. I order a couple of umbrella drinks, and it's going to be a nice romantic night, and me and him together, you know, one of the few nights that we have, because we were both very busy in those days. But I wanted to be with my wife. I wanted to just be me and him and no one excuse me. So out comes John Lee Hooker, a real blues man. I mean, John Lee Hooker is the authentic deal. And when you're sitting there with your wife, it's just you and him, and out she comes. I'm telling you, there's nothing better. So she immediately launches into Annie Mae, and he gets up and starts rubbing himself all over the table. And now you're looking at your wife, and of course, I love him. He's my wife. Am I going to tell him to sit down? I ask you, Phil, is that what I'm going to do?
Well, I mean, was she drunk?
Oh, sure he was drunk. He was loaded right up to the gills. He was loaded right up to his ears. And I shouldn't say this, but he was, I'm sorry, Margaret, but he popped a couple of Quaaludes.
That is wrong, Frank.
Sorry, So we're there, and he's had a few drinks. He popped a couple of Quaaludes before you. Excuse me, I'm just,
You all right? You want a drink?
Do I want a drink? No, I'm fine. Shaw's the one that needs the drink.
I don't need a drink. What makes you think I need a drink?
Well, I was listening to her going, doing something with the voice. Is she all right?
Yes, I'm all right.
Okay, I'm sorry, I don't mean to talk about you like you're not here, General, but... So, John Lee Hooker launches into Annie Mae. Well, Margaret loves that song, and I do too. It's a great bluesy song, and he jumps up and starts hunching the table leg, hunching bar stools, rubbing the cigarette machine. God almighty, I thought it wouldn't end. I mean, he's all the way out the front door to a cab sitting at the corner and then back in again, and there wasn't one object that wasn't nailed down that he didn't try to make love to, all the way back to our table. Meanwhile, John Lee... I've got a little bit of an allergy. Meanwhile, John Lee Hooker hasn't taken her eyes off of him, staring with those big, wide, bugged-out eyes like she's just seen a ghost.
That does it.
What's the matter with you, Phil?
Nothing.
Well, I better hang up because I know what's going to happen now. He's going to come home, and, man, it's going to be Katie bar the door.
You hung up.
Yeah. Margaret.
That was uncalled for, Phil. You go, yoo-hoo-hoo. You laugh like a child.
Well, I can't help it. Your husband tells a funny story. He tells a funny story. You rubbed yourself on everything that wasn't nailed down right out the front door down to a cab.
Yes, I found myself down at the end of the block, and then I turned around and came back.
And as you were coming back, you just went ahead and rubbed yourself and everything?
All right, I'm getting up again and leaving.
Margaret, you can't keep going out and coming back and going out and coming back.
Really? Watch me.
All right, so thank you, Frank. Excuse me. Interesting story, seeing John Lee Hooker there in New York, lo these many years ago. I don't yet know, nor have I any great desire to know, what the medal count is at the Winter Olympics, although I'm sure I'm going to get interested. One of the things about the Olympics is you're waiting for the big story, you know? You're waiting for the big story?
What do you mean?
Well, what I mean is, it isn't so much, you know, who won the biathlon or who's winning. you're waiting for the interesting story of some guy who started out life with only one leg, and now he's won the International Hopscotch Championship or something like that, you know. You're frowning, bud.
Well, it's kind of tasteless to say it that way.
Well, I said it that way, okay? I said it that way, and the more you guys criticize me for the things I do, I'm going to redouble my efforts at saying those very things until you guys can't possibly criticize it anymore. Do you understand?
I mean,
do you understand, Robert? Do you understand, General?
Why, yes, Bill. I didn't think I was doing anything wrong.
I just, when you guys start laying into me about stuff, I'm going to do it even more. So your criticism will have the effect of making it happen more. If you want it to happen less, then just keep your mouth shut, and I'll stop doing it.
I keep my mouth shut about your face, and it's still there.
I'm going to kick your ass.
Ow! Ow, you hurt me.
I didn't even touch you.
He never touched you, bud. Quit trying to make a mountain out of a molehill.
All right. So what I was saying, I believe is true. So you're waiting for the story. And it could be any kind of a story. Will the hockey team win again? I don't know. You know, all of those traditional storylines are sort of we're now the bad boy in the block, America. Or who's the big winter force now?
Well, the big winter force now is like Norway or something, man, or Sweden.
Yes, Sweden is like the badass, isn't it? Or Russia. But I got to tell you, if there's one thing about the Cold War I miss, it was the Olympics. The Cold War made the Olympics fantastic. I mean, it just made the Olympics fantastic. It was always the big bad commies versus America. And yeah, it was the West versus the East because, you know, we had West Germany and all of our little guys, and Russia had, Hungary and Czechoslovakia and all their guys, and East Germany. East Germany was badass. East Germany in track was badass. East Germany, as a matter of fact, every time anybody wanted to say anything about how blacks were superior when it came to speed and running because of their physiology, all you had to do was look at East Germany. East Germany used to kick our ass in the sprint, in track and field, especially in track events like the 100 meters or the, you know, some of these semi-long distances, the relays, etc. The East Germans used to kick our ass, all a bunch of white guys, all a bunch of white boys kicking ass on all of America's African-American athletes. Yeah, we had our wins. But the fact is, if you had any ridiculous, asinine notion about all of that old school, you know, black people are faster thing, all you had to do was look at these East Germans. They were nuts, you know.
Well, a lot, and I'm back, by the way.
I ought to, by all rights, kick you out.
And why is that?
Because you're getting up and leaving and coming back and leaving and coming back and leaving.
Well, I'm back now to make this point, and your listeners should know this. Yes, the East Germans were good, but you talk about doping, Phil.
All right. I mean, yes, there was all of that. But who the hell says we weren't? You talk about the East Germans doping. They also had a scandal involving East German women. Were they actually women or were they men? You know, they literally had this argument. I think they even gave them full physicals to make sure they had female organs. And then the argument, of course, was made, well, they had sex change operation. I'm telling you that it got bizarre. But, because the East Germans were incredible. Fast, good God almighty. And then you got the Russians in the field events. They kicked ass. Pole vault, high jump. Anybody remember the name? Probably you're too young to remember the name Valerie Brumel. Valerie Brumel was the high jump champion of the world, man. And was a consistent gold medal winner. And they had the hammer throw. And the Russians and the East Germans and all of those little satellite countries of Bulgaria this and Romania that, who doesn't remember them in gymnastics? From Olga Korbut to Nadia Comăneci from Romania, she was just a force unto herself, man. This little 14-year-old chick, she kicked ass. So the Cold War was it was a scary time. It was a tense time. It was a potentially violent and devastating time. But when it came to the Olympics, man, it was something. It was something. It was a real blood feud, and it came down. It came down to ugly things. I mean, the basketball in '72. where everybody thinks the Russians just cheated their asses off and got the extra second on the clock and beat our guys. I think it was the first time we'd lost in basketball. To the hockey win in 1980, the miracle on ice. I mean, it was a for sport anyway, and for just the sheer fun of the event, man, you couldn't beat it. Couldn't beat it at all.
Might have been worth the nuclear war.
Might have. Might have. World-famous Phil Henry Show. We got to take a break. We'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. My close personal friend, young Miss McKee, has just said, either you get out of this break, Henry, or I'm going to fly to L.A. and do some damage, and so we'll be right back. Welcome back, folks, the world-famous Phil Henry Show. I don't know about anybody else. I've had a good time tonight, you know.
Well, you're having a good time at other people's expense, Phil.
Oh, is that right, Margaret?
Yeah, why don't you quit crying about it?
Why don't you quit crying about it?
Oh, you know, you got to just, some days, Margaret, as our dear father said, some days you get the bear and the other days...
The bears bite you on the ass.
The bears?
Yeah, the bears, multiple, the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, you ought to know about that.
You know something? Hey!
Watch it.
Ow! When he goes ow and I don't touch him, I can sue him for that, can't I?
Yeah, I don't know.
Ow!
What's that?
For Margaret.
Okay, Nikki's got a message for you, Margaret.
From my great-grandmother beyond the grave.
Yes?
Myrtle McKee. Quit your bitching.
Now, Nikki, I can get on an airplane as fast as you can, and I can be in Washington, D.C. in 4 hours. I can make a beeline directly to the studio and slap your little mouth for that.
Come at me, bro.
Oh. You know what? I'll come there and rub myself.
Hey, turn that off, will you?
I thought we needed harmonica music.
You know, Margaret, there are days
when
you...
You want to be a scissor sister?
You know, I did time. I did time. Not a long time, but I've been in a jail cell. I've been caged heat. Understand?
I've been caged heat.
What are you laughing at?
You know what I'm laughing at. See, this is what bothers me, man. I had a whole great story to tell here about something. I forget what.
All right.
No, that's okay. All right, so that's that. And let's just hope. Well, we were talking about the Olympics and, you know, all of that crap. But we will have the medal count, I guess, at some point. I don't know, man. Who knows? You know, I can't even tell you how we did in the last Winter Olympics. I can't even tell you how we did in the last Summer Olympics. I don't know, you know.
How come you ain't paying attention to it?
Because there isn't a Cold War at stake. Phil only likes it if a nuclear war is threatened.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. No, but we will definitely. I've been to an Olympic Games, all right? How many of you guys have? I don't think so. None of you. Have you, General?
No, I have never been to the Olympics, although I almost went to the Montreal Olympics, but in the last minute, something came up, and so I had to stay home.
Well, what came up?
Well, I got married.
You got married. That's what came up.
Yes, something inconvenient came up.
Have you been to one, Margaret?
No, I've never been to one. I almost went to the 84 games, but I didn't go because Frank didn't want me to go because... Oh, I know why. There was a gang war. They thought there was going to be some gang war on the freeway, and it never happened.
Yeah, I went to the 84 games, and I remember that whole prediction that there would be a gang war, that there would be... they were afraid, folks, in the 1984 Olympic Games here in L.A., they were afraid that there would be gangs that would come up onto the freeway from the mean streets below and, you know, rob people in their cars, and the people couldn't go anywhere because they were stuck in traffic jams. I mean, every kind of nightmare scenario that you could imagine was predicted for the 84 Olympics. In fact, what happened in the 84 Olympics was some payback. The United States boycotted the 80 Olympics that were held in Moscow, and the reason was because Russia had invaded Afghanistan. And this was President Carter's baby. He... led this charge to boycott the 80 Olympics because of the invasion of Afghanistan. So I suppose we should have expected that 4 years later, when the Olympics were held in Los Angeles, that the Russians would pull the same thing, and they did. The Russians boycotted the 84 games because they said that the United States could not guarantee the security of their athletes, because the U.S. was a violent, gang-riddled, gang-ridden wasteland, a Mad Max horror story, and they wanted no part of it whatsoever.
1 minute.
And so the Russians stayed away. The Chinese didn't. And so the 84 Olympics turned into not so much America versus the Russians as it turned into America versus the...
Chinese.
Yeah, the Chinese. And the Chinese and Americans had a... We had a great Olympics in 84. It was a lot of fun. The Chinese were fantastic at diving. That was really where they shone through. And gymnastics as well. They were not too great. The track and field was fantastic. It was us against the Romanians and all those fantastic long distance. There was little Zola Budd from South Africa. She was the story. She ran in bare feet. Mary Decker Slaney, who fell down as the result of some mishap on the track and started crying and wailing and squealing. And everybody was kind of upset with her because she wasn't acting like much of a woman. It was great. It was fantastic. I fell in love with her that day. I love women that cry. Phil Hendry Show. We'll see you tomorrow.